Hello, everybody. This is Ground Zero Growth. I'm your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbod. I'm joined today with the great Kevin Kwok, founder of J29 Creative. Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
So tell me about where did the name J29 come from? I've meant to ask you this once or twice.
So it's Jeremiah 29:11. So if you're familiar with the Bible, it's for I know the plans I have for you, plans not to harm you, but give you hope and a future. It's always been the verse that I live my life by. And I am a believer, and it's been cool, right? It's been a part of my early career, some of the hard times I've gone through, my wedding day, and it just made sense when I felt like, hey, I go start this J29 creative journey, starting a digital marketing agency. It just made a lot of sense to just go that route.
So this is excellent timing, sooner rather than later, because something we didn't discuss in the earlier section, this particular episode is going to air the day after Christmas. And so I was specifically going to ask you if we could kind of get into your religious background, talk about it in a little bit more detail, specifically because of the timing of the episode. What's interesting is I didn't know what you were going to tell me because I didn't know your religious background before this moment. I mean, you could have literally been like, "Oh, I'm a Satanist," and been like, "Okay, well, that's what we're talking about, I guess. Odd timing, but let's go." So anyway, that's fantastic. I love that you've integrated it like that too. Can you tell me about kind of what your first dream was early on? So are you a Kansas City native? Are
No, I'm not.
you,
So I
where are you
am an
from?
immigrant. So I'm from Hong Kong. And my parents moved here whenever the 1997 when China took back over from the British, right? So my parents knew that was coming. We moved here in 1987. I was a little boy. I was probably six when I came to the US. And then we moved from to Springfield, Missouri. Actually, my parents went from we were a short time LA and then went to Springfield because my uncle owned Chinese restaurants, surprisingly, right? And so my dad ended up doing that for a while. And so really I went from mega city to small town Springfield in the Midwest, probably being one of the only Asian kids in my school. So
How old were you at that transition?
I was six. Yeah. So
Okay. All right. What made them think Springfield?
my uncle, yep, they
Okay.
own
That's
restaurants,
right.
so
Okay.
they sponsor my parents to
Okay.
come to US with their visa and stuff. So yeah.
Excellent. That's very interesting. So what was kind of your first dream then? Early on in high school, you're the only Asian kid in class. What was kind of that first dream?
Yeah, so I love basketball. I play basketball. So I want to play basketball, but of course, I stopped growing. I just didn't grow anymore. I'm fast, but I didn't
Okay,
grow.
okay,
So
okay, okay.
so that's dream slowly crush, right? And then the percentage that makes it to NBA is actually very small. So I started learning. Yeah, I love basketball, but I probably don't have the skill set like MJ, so that's probably not gonna happen. So, yeah.
That's fair. No, I understand too. I actually interviewed a former Harlem Globetrotter at one point, and he's like 7 foot something. He told a fun story of literally being in the back seat of a car, driving it from basically the back seat. He had it back so far. Cop pulls him over and goes, "I didn't think anybody was driving." Okay, interesting. So that kind of starts to fade away. Where are you at now, and what replaced it
Yeah,
in
so
that transition? You like in college
okay,
now,
yeah,
or
so pretty
where did it
much
fade?
high school basketball is probably not gonna happen. Then I graduated early from high school, so I graduated I think from high school in three years. Back then you can do that. So I went into college early, and I thought, hey, when you have Asian parents, there's a few options. It's either an engineer, a doctor, or a lawyer. right? It's the
Right.
untold, right? But a lot of people
Sure,
know
sure,
that,
sure,
right?
sure, sure, sure.
They're nice about like, hey, chase your dreams, but
Sure.
what we're paying for college degree wise, here's some categories, and then you can chase your dreams all you want on the side, right?
In those
So
categories, yeah.
I was a big fitness guy. I was always an athlete. I like to work out. I won the nationals as a martial artist, and so I wanted to go into really personal training and fitness, right? Kines and stuff.
Okay.
And I also love kids, right? At one time, I thought I'm gonna be a youth pastor, right? And I'm gonna be a youth pastor and
Okay.
love Jesus and be a youth pastor. Yeah.
Now, when did that come about, too, by the way? Because were your parents Christian coming from Hong Kong?
No, they weren't. So the only reason we went to churches in the Midwest, there's a Chinese church, right? Usually in
Okay.
all these little suburban cities. And what happens is they always serve like authentic Chinese food, right? That you can't get, right, in small towns like Springfield, Missouri. So my parents went there to just connect, right, with other Asians and be able to eat. So that's how our family started being introduced to church and different things. And then my dad grew up in a, so all his brothers and sisters immigrated before we came to the States. So they grew up in kind of a Christian home. So we were fortunate we were introduced to that. And so honestly, we went for the food, and they always have children's programs and stuff. And then I got introduced to being a Christian and church and all that stuff, right? And for the context, right, later on, I think the kids became Christians first, and then my parents kind of like, hey, it's positive, and it's good for them, so let's do it. And that's how it all started.
That's fantastic. Okay. So to circle back then to it, you've got this dream. Maybe you're going to be a youth pastor. Maybe you're going to be a personal trainer, fitness coach. We've got a few options here. Also, right around or post college, where doctor, attorney, or what was the third category? Accountant?
Yeah, engineer.
Engineer. Okay. Sorry. Engineer. So you've got a few dreams really in the hopper, kind of some of obligation, some of interest, and
Yeah, so
which one do you pick?
I think my dream was more personal training or something in the fitness realm. The youth pastor thing was more like, it was a short-lived kind of, I want to do this, but my parents shot that down pretty fast, right? You can be a youth pastor without going to get a degree for it,
Sure.
So I ended up actually going to pre-med for becoming a pediatrician. So at the time I graduated, it was SMSU back then, it's Missouri State now, and they didn't have a true medical program. So my goal was to be pre-med and then transfer to UMKC here in Kansas City. And they actually have this special program where you can come out of high school and go UMKC and go through their little 8-year program and become a doctor pretty quickly. So that was kind of my goal. So I went in, and this is where everything changes, right? The course, right? I went in pre-med. So for someone that's actually, my background is actually a software engineer, right? So how did that switch, right? So while I was in pre-med, taking the courses I need for the MCAT, and I graduated college in like 3 years. So I was a young graduate because in order to get in med school, you had to take above average workloads in order to even do your interview into the medical program. So it was interesting. So I have a bunch of biology, chemistry classes that I never even use. But during that time when I was in college, it was around 99, 2000. Well, something happened, right? The dot-com era. So
Yeah.
it was the whole bubble of the internet, right? What we know
Yeah.
today. So that became a talk. Everyone's talking about Y2K, all this stuff, right? So while I was falling asleep in chemistry classes and biology classes, I was able to convince my parents, hey, there's something called a software engineer.
Yes.
And I was like, as a medical student, I don't think I'm gonna do really well because I really struggle with dissecting a cat. I just couldn't do it, you know? And that's when I knew I probably shouldn't be in medicine. If I can't do the
The
cold cat,
cat.
I
Yeah.
probably can't do a
Yeah.
human
That's
cadaver.
fair.
So it
That's
became a
fair.
real struggle for me. Like I just couldn't get past like I wanted to throw up. I couldn't touch it. I really struggle with it. And that's when I told my mom and dad, I was like, I don't know. It's a mental thing. I can't do this. So I was like, hospitals have computers, you know, and it's supposed to be the way of the future, and I can still be an engineer. So how
I'm
about
just
I?
enjoying you getting pressured through and imagining a world where a doctor comes in and is like, oh, big queasy here. Sorry, can
Yep.
you hold the rag a little closer to your neck? It's just.
Yep. So I ended up transferring. I was like, hey, mom and dad, can I transfer? It's gonna be the next big thing, right? Is computers.
Right.
So
Yeah.
they're like, okay. So I transfer my credit hours and I became a CIS degree in software
Sure.
engineer. Yeah.
That's cool. That's fascinating.
Yep.
Okay. So you're joining the dot-com era. You're going to be a software engineer. Are you going to develop the next big thing or go to work for Google?
I think at the time it was working for like the it was Mozilla was real popular. I wanted to work for like Firefox and all
Yeah.
these different companies. I think Google was actually in its early infancy stages, right? It was during the MySpace era. Facebook wasn't even a thing, right? So,
Right. No,
yeah.
exactly right. I remember looking,
Yeah. So I'm aging myself. I'm
yeah.
dating.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
Fair, fair. So we're gonna work for Firefox was pretty big. Oh, I'm trying to channel that inner era, if I'm being honest. Yeah. So, okay. So what progress me past that then. What's you're gonna be you graduate then with a CIS degree. You're gonna be a software engineer. What's that first big job?
Yeah, so it was around. So I graduated in 2002, right? I had a high number of hours, so I went to did classes in summer. I graduated in like 2.5, 3 years, right, out of college. Graduated, and guess what? The bubble burst, right? So well, web is a web two now. Is a change, right? So
I
everything I,
know. I
yep.
think I heard a quote once that said, you could put your money in any stock, and as long as it was tech related, it was going to go up.
Yep.
And assuming that's remotely true, because I wasn't investing at the time, that definitely would explain a bit of a
Well, but it
bubble
was an
bust.
interesting time for a college graduate, right? So, like, college is telling you, hey, you're going to make this much money. You're in tech and software.
Yep.
Well, when I went to school, my senior year, they were just talking about object-oriented development, right? Programming. When Java just emerged. So, everyone
Okay.
was. We went to school for COBOL, Fortran,
Okay. All
Fortran,
right.
and
All right.
also I studied VB, Visual Basics, right? I think 2.0 or something, right?
Excellent.
So it was like, talk about setting you up for failure, right? So I was grad senior year comes along. Oh, we're gonna do object-oriented development. So it's gonna be completely different than what you've learned in school. And all of a sudden is, man, but this is my last semester. I have like two classes left, right? So I graduate with none of the latest skill sets, right? It was more all the stuff that are dying away, right? And so it was funny because I never, you know, I hardly tap into, I took one Java class maybe and some C, right? But it was
Okay.
all like new, this new emerging languages. So when I graduated, it was one of those things where it's like the bubble burst. Now there's so much people doing internet stuff. And it was actually really hard to find a job. So to stay relevant, right? To keep you guys in mind, it's very similar to the marketing world today.
Okay.
right? Social media is taking off. All these younger people that are finishing high school are like, I'm gonna get into marketing because marketing's gonna pay me six figures and I can make a lot of money as a social media manager because everyone needs social media, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna be a YouTuber. But it's almost that false perception, right? And then all of a sudden you graduate, now you have a sea of marketing people, and now they're all applying for the same jobs. Well, that's what happened to me. So we had a sea of developers and programmers because everyone thought that's going to be the money maker. And then we
But
all
that won't
graduated.
happen with AI, right? That couldn't possibly happen with AI. There's not a
Exactly.
similar trend with regards to every developer has to learn AI or they're irrelevant and we don't know where it's going.
So all of us, all these young people predicted the future and we thought, hey, we're going to do the same thing. But what happens? Now it's super ultra competitive. Everyone's applying for the same jobs, and now I'm struggling finding a job.
Okay. Yeah.
So to fast forward a little bit, so I was looking for a job for almost about a year. So I ended up doing the only professional job that hired me was like an insurance place, right? And this insurance place actually sold like life insurance and that's why I said I know a little about every industry. So I tried taking a
Yeah.
series seven. I actually have my insurance degree and then
Really?
not insurance degree, but the insurance license, right? So I ended up signing up with it's not North, it's like Southwestern or something. And not
Okay.
Northwestern, but
Sure,
South
sure, sure,
Insurance
sure.
Mutual.
Yeah.
So I went through the training program and then midway through the program, so I passed my insurance exam. Then I get my job that I really wanted, which is a software engineering job for creating software for the newspaper industry, right? And it was an Italian company that had a manufacturing in Springfield, Missouri. So I got to pay in like European, what they were paying out there, but here in the US. So it was like a dream job for a younger guy. I got to travel. So they called me back. And I got that job. So that was my software engineering start of my journey as a developer. So I quit my insurance job really
Now,
quick. So
how did they find you? Are you just applying the whole
I apply, I
time?
interviewed,
Okay.
they just never got back to me for a
Okay.
while.
Okay.
And it was like probably 6, 7 months later, and then they called me up and go, hey, open
That's
up, you want to
fascinating.
do it? So I took the job and so started developing. Started creating software for the newspaper industry. And during that time, I did my share of traveling to like Europe, got to work on like Dallas Morning News, all these big newspapers in the US. And I learned something about myself during that time. So a lot of the stereotype for developers are usually introverts, right? A lot of us like to like robotics and AI and all the new tech. Well, I was a very outgoing guy. I love to talk, I love to connect. And I think that's when I first got to dabble with marketing because keep in mind, I was creating software for the newspaper industry.
Yeah, I'm seeing
And
it.
yep.
I'm
And at
seeing
the
it.
time, the newspaper always had a marketing department.
Yes.
So I was doing these overnight every once in a while. Like I was in Dallas like every week, helping Dallas Morning News to implement their software with my tech team. So I went out there and, well, when you're young, you're single. Well, all the other techs were older dudes, right? So I wanted to hang out with young people. So what happened? I was like, the marketing department at these newspapers are always younger. So I kind of
Okay.
connected with them, and they were the ones doing the Photoshop stuff, designing the ads on newspapers and stuff. And that's when I was first, I think, introduced to marketing was, hanging out with these young people after work because now I'm in a foreign city. I'm not in my hometown, and I'm traveling, and I want to hang out with people my age. And most of the people my age were in marketing in the newspaper. So that's how I started talking to them and dabbling in marketing. But it wasn't still then that I got into marketing. It was I experienced a layoff, right? So that company ended up laying me off, and it's funny. It's the same year when LinkedIn started kind of taking off, and I still remember so clearly, right? The executives in my company were really upset. You know, it's life changing because these things started happening. It wasn't iPhones, but it
Smartphones.
was more
Yeah.
smartphones, right? The
Yeah.
Blackberries and different things like that. So a lot of them started, the newspaper was becoming irrelevant. Yeah. So
Gotcha.
they
Slowly but
end up
surely.
laying the North America division, and a lot of these executives were losing their jobs, but I was still a pretty young guy. So I was like, oh, that's exciting. And I get to do something new. And that's when I knew that, hey, no matter what you do, the key is you have to be open-minded for change. And I knew that, hey, with software engineering, I realized at a young age, I thought, you know, my parents taught me attorney, engineer, medicine, right? And I learned that, hey, the guys that made the most money in that company was actually the sales guys. And they dictated what we did, right? Hey, they sold the software solutions and then the engineers, we just have to do it, right? So early on, when I experienced my first layoff, I was like, if I can help a company make money, I will never have to worry about how to put food on my table again. And that was a huge blessing because I saw all these older guys getting laid off. And they were devastated. And all of a sudden, except the sales guys, they were fine. And I learned on, hey, even though I have a title of software engineer, and I see that mistake made so many times, oh, I'm not going to do that. I didn't go to school for that. I think you have to be open to adapt and change. So I started going, hey, I can be a software guy, but I need to work towards selling, understanding the client's need. And learning how to create solutions. And it was that epitome that changed everything for me.
It's fascinating that it's awesome that you had that. If I'm going to be honest, I don't even know if I had that after I started my business. I mean, I knew I had to have that in sales for my business, but I think one of the bigger catalysts of that for me is Grant Cardone. A huge way he's capable of making money is he just goes in and he produces values. I don't even think he talks about what it's going to cost until he's produced enough value that he can then turn around and say, now what are you going to pay to keep me? Kind of a thing. And you're exactly right. You know, I mean, if you know, you they say, I read a book that says, you need to be producing about 3 times your value to stay. So if you're producing 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, at some point that is when you're de facto irreplaceable. That I think that's the closest you can be to being irreplaceable in a position.
And people don't think about that because companies, businesses, everyone's looking at bottom line, you know. And if you can't produce some sort of value to them, you are replaceable. You can be the best personality, the best skill set, right? And it's hard.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, because I'm just thinking about some personalities too. It's like, well, I wasn't wired that way and I could never do that. But we're all capable of it. This is one of the things some of the folks we've been interviewing. I mean, gentleman built a 50-person firm. He was the chief salesman and he's an introvert. In fact, he tests out. It's funny, the way he described it, it's like a 1 out of 10 scale, and he's basically an 11 if there was one on introversion. And yet he was the chief salesman and he built the firm. So that's fascinating. So tell me about, okay, so you're getting this mental shift So is that kind of what did you immediately start your own marketing consulting firm, fractional marketing firm, or was because you know you need to be in sales, you know you need to be in marketing.
So I got laid off, got a decent severance because I can't move up in that company because I had an ability to work with clients really well. So I got severance. I took that severance, started my, I always say in Springfield, I was the first hipster company. So I was a young man, so I started in downtown Springfield, Missouri. Keep in mind, not Kansas City, but Springfield. I ended up renting an office and started my own. It was called J29 Global. So that's really the start of the J29 story. It was a call, J29 Global. It was me, a couple friends that I knew out of Chicago who was doing web development at the time. And then also a friend of mine who was at university doing IT security. And he was just fed up and he was like, oh, I want to do something different. So it was four young guys and we started this company. J29 Global, what we did was really, so you got to remember the time, right? We didn't have cloud. It was really like machine servers. So in Springfield, there's a
And
lot of
what
that.
prompted this integration? It almost seems like the J29 thing has been with you since the beginning. And maybe this is a mindset difference, but like when I first started my company and I wasn't professed Christian at the time of starting it, I was pretty passionate that Christian and business, religion, I kind of needed to be separate. It's a more recent endeavor that I've started integrating them a lot more. But you almost seem to just always have that innately. At least based off, was there any prompting? Did you
Yeah, so
really?
keep in mind, I wanted to be a youth pastor. So,
Yes, fair. Okay. I'm
so the
seeing it now.
whole, I felt like, hey, that's kind of my maybe my calling, but at the same time, I want to be a professional. So, the whole workplace ministry, right? So, I was trying to keep it kind of like this hidden, right? But it becomes
Okay.
this conversation piece if it happens.
Right.
Yeah. So we so during that time, it was when. So you gotta remember at the newspaper software company, I was doing what they call document imaging, and because the newspaper is actually annotating dots to print your newspaper. So we had this idea, hey, there's a lot of attorney firms in Springfield, and that used to attorneys would have these libraries. So every attorney office you go to has one. Four,
Yep.
three offices where it's just bookshelves of files.
Documents. Yep. Been to a few
Yep.
of them. I know exactly what
Yep.
you're talking
So we
about. Like this
started.
dedicated room, just of.
Exactly. Yep. And
And
some
it's
have
not in
even these
cabinets
old-fashioned
even. It's
ladders
just.
where.
Yep.
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 So me and my
That's
buddy
fascinating.
decided, hey, we're going to scan all that stuff and we go write this code and software.
Doctors' firms, I feel like, have had a lot of that too.
Yeah,
I
similar.
want to say I'm thinking I'm it's not like a but I think so. So anyway, sorry, keep going. I'm
So
just
that's the
thinking it through.
concept. We decided to do this file management, right? And back then it was just an easy, simple code where we scan these things, move them to electronic, get a server set up in their office, and go, hey, now you can save this room. You can keep it on file. And then now you can just look up, right? If you look up Johnson, all the Johnson files will come up. So that was the start of
So
J29.
you're
And that's what.
basically doing mass scanning the PDF kind of a thing. Almost.
Yeah.
It's a job.
Yep.
Yeah.
So file management on a server,
Yeah.
that type
Yeah.
of thing,
Yeah.
right? So that's what we were doing, and that was the start of my entrepreneur journey, right? And then we were, the other two guys from Chicago were doing web design because they were, that's what they did, web designers. So we started really, it was more an IT type agency. I wouldn't call it a
Sure.
marketing agency at the time, and it was
Yeah.
just popular back then, right? It was like the web, you could sell a website for $80,000 back then. So for us, we only needed one or two projects to pay us for. So we were like, this is great. Now you can't, it's hard to sell a website for $2,000,
Yeah.
yeah. So it was one of those things like, then we were like, hey, we're in Springfield, our costs is low. And that's why I said it's the first hipster company. So we were like, why don't we? And we're single. So we're like, why don't we drive to Chicago and these anything that's nearby, like Texas, and we'll sell projects. So we would do these stents.
Specifically, document management ingestion projects and file server. Okay.
Yep. So we
Okay.
started doing that type of stuff, and then selling web development for
And
like.
how are you selling it? What kind of costs are you getting for that? Because I don't know. For some reason, I'm initially thinking it's not a small project, but it's also, in my mind, I could see it being difficult to sell. It's like, we're going to ingest all your documents. It's like, okay, well, what's that? Pennies per document? It's like, no, I mean, it's going to really cost something because there's a
Yeah,
lot
back then
back
we were
there.
selling stuff like that, maybe like 30, 40K, and then we had like a
Sure.
monthly retainer of like 2 grand a month or something to
To maintain the server and
maintain
future
the server,
documents.
maintain
Okay.
the documents, that type of
Love
thing.
it. Okay. Yeah.
And yeah, you gotta remember it was all new, right? So the whole idea is getting them to trust us, and then once it does help them a lot because now they can save time by typing in a last name and find those files versus going through folders. So it was huge cost savings for them. So it made
Yeah.
sense. So with that said, I started J29 Global, started doing that. And I think it's 2 years in when you're a young person. You got to remember, I was never I always love entrepreneurship. I love the feeling of it. I love the selling aspect of it, all of it, right? Being able to control your own time. And so I got convinced into opening. My dad wasn't necessarily happy with his job always, and he always wanted to, hey, he's a chef, so it's like he wanted to do something with his son, open a restaurant bar. So I opened a restaurant bar in 2004. And yeah, and that's when I got into the restaurant business. And it's true, the restaurant business, if you've never done it, is
I
it's
was going to
not for the
say,
faint of heart. And the profitability
seeing the writing on the wall here already
is
a little
not that
bit.
great, right? So it was like, okay,
Right.
restaurant bar, young guy, and I was like, hey, the bar business would be really cool, you know? And so jump into that. So you gotta remember, I went from youth pastor, and now I'm like this heathen. You know, because every type of business I get into, I get really zoned in. So now I have this restaurant and it had this huge bar aspect to it. So we created what it was
And
called.
you're really smart, and if I'm really smart and I'm getting really deep into a bar, I want to know how I can get people as drunk as possible.
Correct. So I opened Easy's Restaurant Bar because I knew it's the whole concept while I was traveling selling the software stuff. I experienced New Orleans, and so I
Okay.
go, hey, Midwest doesn't
Excellent.
really have back then there wasn't jazz and all that stuff. Or I was like, hey, let's open a Cajun restaurant bar. So we
Excellent.
opened this Cajun restaurant, a fusion bar. And you gotta remember, Springfield's a college town. You have Drury, you have, the
Yeah.
Baptist colleges, all the they still party and they still drink and all these Christian
Excellent.
colleges.
And
And
we've
then
got a
you
new
have
restaurant with a New Orleans twist.
So we
Clearly
did
being very
that, and
popular.
well, no one told me. I thought, hey, this is a really cool concept. It's gonna be fun. I'm just gonna do that on the side while I run
Okay.
my IT stuff, right? And let my dad be the chef and let him do that. So I was making good money. I was a young man, so I was like, so I did that.
Which I feel like everybody discounts the quantity of complexities involved in like a because this sounds like a nicer restaurant, bar, event space, and it's just, it's not that tech is easy, it's just that I think people discount the back office. We've got to get all the drinks there, we've got to inventory them, we've got to track when we're out of Captain, and heaven forbid we run out of Captain and not have more Captain, now we're not selling some drinks, or the pricing of literally everything, and a single drink's price goes up in your delivery. Now you've got to charge more for that drink. And but this is all stuff that isn't, especially at the period you're talking, it's not necessarily the most automatic. And then you could have a distributor in there, they're going to help with that, but they're going to take more costs. Maybe it's we try to cut them out, but that's more we have to do. There's just so many juggles
And there's so much theft in
involved.
that industry too, right? Like bartenders, oh, if I
Yes.
give away a little bit, it won't hurt their bottom line, right? And it's hard to track,
Right.
like,
I'm
how
gonna
much
get
are
a
you really
slightly
giving
better
away, you know?
tip. Right. No, actually, that's a great point. I actually had somebody the other day. I was gonna pay for my colleague's drink. The colleague's drink didn't end up on my tab, and I said, "Hey, his drink isn't on my tab," and they're like, "Don't worry about it." So, I mean, this is exactly what you're describing. They did it to me. Well, it's just me. It's like, well, but it's not just you. It's you and the 20 other people per day at $3 a pop. That's $60 a day. And
Yep, it
so,
all adds up, right? So,
right.
within that, so I grew up in the restaurant business because my dad had restaurants, but I never actually worked in it. Like, yeah, I mean, I helped my parents growing up, but it's more like mom and pop Chinese restaurant. But I've never actually
Now
done
you're in
like
the
a,
middle of it,
yep, now I'm
smack
the
dab in the
guy
middle of it.
making decisions, running it and stuff, right? And it's a different concept. This is more like a sit down, fine dining in the day, night we had like expensive martinis, drinks, and then we also had this college bar vibe. So just like any entrepreneur, I get really into it and trying to figure out how to dabble and all that stuff. So I would say I started the restaurant business and I learned that, hey, I gotta be full time in this thing. It started taking away from the other business, and I was just not there for that other business. And this business really needed is in its infancy stages. It really needed time, right? Like, you know, I needed to really watch my costs, different things. So I went all in on the restaurant with my dad and pretty kind of gave that the IT stuff on hold and let my other partners, they started running it. And then finally, there was a time I shifted out of that other business and went all in on the restaurant bar. So, yeah.
Now, how was that? Was that rewarding? So a friend of mine, Pat, he writes this great book, Leaping Forward, and I think he ran a couple different entertainment style restaurants. And the impression from the book is that it was almost kind of like a, I don't know. This is me. I'm going to call it a bit of a black hole, because it pulls a lot of time, but the margins are such that there's not necessarily like a massive return, and it just keeps pulling more time. And I think, and I've been in this space mentally, not in a restaurant business, where I'm just thinking we start pouring more time into it, thinking the return will be tomorrow. The return will be tomorrow. The return will be next week. The return will be next month. The return will be. I'm just curious, is that the space here, or are you guys actually killing it?
Yeah, so the restaurant bar, here's the whole twist to my whole story, right? So during the restaurant bar, you know, it was one of those, you're young, you know, it's life of the party, and I was good at it. I was started, you know, I don't drink myself. I'm actually like, I turn bright red like a lot of Asians, and you know, alcohol and I don't mix, right? So
Okay.
I end up learning how to bartend. I can actually do a lot of used to I could do tricks and different things, but now I wouldn't put it past me, right? I did a little video with my marketing team and I think I lost maybe 50% of the liquor. It fell on the t it poured out on the table instead of into the glass. So yeah.
Okay. Not quite like riding a bike, I'm hearing.
So it's funny. So I was you know, I end up like getting really good at like bartending during that time, understanding all those things. And the business, I think 2 years in, we started really like turning, shifting. We were able to pay off our loan on the restaurant. We were starting to be more profitable, right? Taking off. And this is where life always takes a toll, right? So I bought a house, and you know, I was doing well where I bought a you know, nice huge house and did all this stuff. And then all of a sudden my dad was telling me that his side hurts, right? And we didn't know what was going on, right? And he just said, "Oh, there's some uncomfort on my side," type thing. And then that's when my father got diagnosed with cancer. And so it's during that was around 2007 when that happened. And in 07, I went through the whole journey with my dad having cancer while we were trying to keep this restaurant afloat. So I never planned on, like, I knew how to cook, and I always told myself I'll never be in the restaurant business and be the cook, right? I hadn't learned all the recipes, became the executive chef of the restaurant, learned how to make drinks. I was always the guy that marketed the restaurant and just did the front of the house. So I learned everything because I found out my dad's cancer, he had tumor, and it was kind of, it's growing. And we just, it was a very short notice type thing where it's outside of our control and we didn't know. And it was one of those things where the tumor ended up spreading. And then it went from his liver to his lungs. And my dad passed away in November 1st of 2000. And it was 2000. Yeah, seven. It was, yeah, so it was 2007. So it happened fairly quickly. And it was very unplanned. And we talk about this in business a lot, right? When everything's going good, a lot of times you don't think about the crisis that can happen. That's outside of our control. And you don't really plan on those things. Like a lot of people go, "Hey, I'm not going to pay for key man insurance. Why do I need that right now? I'm young, I'm healthy." Or things that you just don't expect, right? Just same thing with, it's very similar to your business, Sam. Like, we can wait, IT, right? We can do that later, right?
Ransomware.
But until
Yeah.
something happens, all of a sudden it becomes a priority. It becomes very real, right? Now you're sitting on a business where, hey, here's this key person that did all the recipes, that did all the cooking and everything. So I ended up really working like Monday through Saturday and be all in on the restaurant to just kind of try to keep it going, learning. And so I
Now I'm
closed.
trying to I know the answer to this, but help me out with the whole why can't you just hire somebody question.
We did hire people, and we have employees at the time too that
Sure.
was in the restaurant. So it wasn't just me, right? It was
Right,
the
but the chef aspect there, but you're having to help.
Having to help. So I think the thing is, I'm a smarter business owner now.
Okay.
I
Well,
was,
I don't.
yeah. So at the time, I was also younger.
Okay.
And it goes back to, we talked about this, I think, prior to our show, the abundance mindsets versus the
Yes.
scarcity, right? So
Yeah.
I wanted to, this is my dad's recipes he created. Oh, we can't let other people know. So I wanted to kind of protect that because it was a unique menu. So we have the, it's almost like Asian fusion with Cajun food, which was really popular. It's really popular now, right? In like the West Coast, right? But it wasn't really introduced to the Midwest. So so you might have like we have like a Cajun fried rice where it's like fried rice
Yeah.
with like crawfish, right? So it was
Yeah.
kind of unique. So I think I want to protect the family recipes and different things like that. And then now I look back too, I probably would have sold the restaurant, right? And in the back of my head, I always thought, hey, one day I'll do it again. So in, oh, 2009 is when I closed the restaurant. So I kept it going after my dad ended up passing away. So I ended up, I learned something during that time. It was one of those moments in life. Like, I have a lot of friends, right? Because I'm young, I'm successful, I have all these friendships, right? But when that happened, I learned that, hey, I was actually pretty lonely. Like, a lot of these people were just my friends for things I had, right? Versus like really being my friend. So, and that's, I think I kind of got more in touch with, the things that I knew when I was younger. I think it was like the whole Jeremiah 29:11, during hardship, you get reminded of the things that like that are everlasting, right? So I started going back to church a little bit. So during that period when I was in that bar restaurant business, I was so busy. So I kind of put my faith and everything kind of on the back burner. And I just got caught up in life, right? And I think when my dad died, it really challenged me to think about the things that really matter. Are you really happy? Are you really living your purpose? Do people really care about you? You know? So those things started going through my mind, and that's when I still remember I had the busiest day in the restaurant. I think that night we did like $6,000 to $7,000 just in one evening. And I remember sitting on that kitchen floor and I was just bawling because I think when my dad died, I never had that time to really process my grieving. And so
I
I was
was just
sitting.
gonna ask.
Yeah, so I'm one of those guys when I have a goal or mission, my mind just keep churning. And I think that's entrepreneurs, a lot of us. And I just focus on the task at hand. Hey, we got to keep going, right?
We see the next immediate problem. I mean, my car was stolen a couple weeks ago, and it's funny. It's like, oh, didn't you feel violated and blah 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 blah. And I was like, no. The immediate thought going through my head is, my entire day revolved around having a car, and now it doesn't. So I need to fix. I need to rent a car. I need a Uber. I need a. It's problem solving mode. So anyway, it's relevant. Yes, I don't think we stop to think about the gravity of the problem. We just recognize we have another problem, and we move into solving
Yeah, and that's why they say, hey, entrepreneurship, a big
it.
part of it is putting out fires, right? It's like the next fire, we got to put it out, put it out, put it out, right? And then creating solutions, like how do we solve it, right?
So you got hit with the truck, the emotional truck, when you're closing. Did I get that right? Like a year or so later, or
Yeah, so years or so later, so I was sitting in my kitchen and I just started bawling. All these reality things started going through my head. And I just knew, like, this isn't Kevin. This is not what I want to do. I'm going to walk away from it. And when you're young, I think at that time I was 20. I think I was 22, 22. So I was like, I didn't think about the financial. Like, I have this building. We're on a triple net lease. We pay off our bank loan, but we have other things that, investors and different things. So I didn't think about like you don't just walk away from things, without all the stuff that comes with it, right? But I was one of the, I put all my employees with another restaurant, kind of made calls because I always wanted to take care of the people that work for me. But then I just walked away from it. It was one of those things like I walked out that restaurant, decided not to come back, without thinking about, oh, now I'm indebted because this building, I owned them a lease and all these other things, the equipment, the micro loans we might have with investors. And I just walked away, right? Because I couldn't do it. So I walked away from it. And that's when
this is
I
as
ended.
burnout as burnout gets. You know,
So I
this
am
is the
yeah,
burnout.
exactly. So I was experiencing all these things and I go, I'm not walking back in. This isn't
Right.
me. And that's when I filed bankruptcy. I still remember, it was funny. I literally went back home. I didn't see anyone for a month or two where I just living off savings and I was the guy that never left the house. I was just grieving, going through a time. I was young. I was
Woe
grieving.
is me.
Never left the house. And then all these debt collectors are literally knocking on my door, calling me. My phone was ringing. I turned off my phone and it was just me. But in the midst of all this, right, I ended up taking bankruptcy. That's when I met my wife. So,
Wow. Every silver lining in the storm. Did I tell you about my partnership that fell through at one point? Have you and I ever talked
No, I've
about
never heard
that?
about it.
I barely avoided bankruptcy, but I had a partnership fall through 50-50 that I didn't expect to fall through. And, the initial decision is I'm going to start over. But what's interesting is, I think it was a couple months for me. It was a couple months of woe, woe is me, just a little crybaby. Actually, I attribute coming back from it to my wife, who I still kind of remember. She just basically leans, I'm playing video games like I was doing every day. She leans into the room and she's like, "So, are you going to do it today, or are you going to go back to a full-time job?" And I think she might have used more colorful terms, but and that's when I was like, "Yeah, I got to do it." That kind of kickstarted it again. But that's cool. So you met your wife in that. How do you meet your wife in that? You're sitting at home.
Funny, it was one of those things, right? And I decided to go to church one night, right? So I was actually hanging out with this other girl, and it was so we all went mountain biking or something during the day, and then I was like, and she went to that church, this church, right? So she's like, "Why don't you go to church with me, and we'll all go to church?" And so I went to church, and it was after church in the lobby. I met my wife because my wife knew that girl, and she was like, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" That type of thing. That girl ended up having plans. She couldn't do anything. So a group of people and my wife ended up going out to a Thai restaurant or something. So yeah, the rest is history. So I met her through that, right? And it was one of those things too. The last thing I was thinking about was a girl. And I was actually just trying to find myself, kind of going through. It's the first time in my life I ever took any kind of medication. So I was taking some medicine for depression at the time. So I was kind of depressed. And that's when I met her. And it was very unplanned. Here's this guy that doesn't have anything. I was broke. I had a nice car. So I kept my car. But besides that, that's about it. And it was funny because it was really like I had all the time in the world, wasn't really working, and I was just hanging out with her like every day after that. And yeah, and we got married in 09, so yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. So, how did you come back?
Yeah,
And what did you
interesting.
come back to? 'Cause we're still not at J29 Creative.
No. Crazy. After my bankruptcy, I went. My uncle owned a restaurant inside Missouri State. It was called Walk and Roll. It's a franchise out the East Coast, right? So I ended up frying chickens for my uncle because I was like, "Hey, you can only live off a savings account so long, and you just went through
Sure.
bankruptcy." And it's like, and then they started looking at like, "Hey, where else you have money?" Because when you take a bankruptcy, you can keep $1,000, during that time. It might have changed now. I don't know. You can keep $1,000. You can keep your car, and you can keep your house. Right? That's about it. And so during that time, I went back to work
Well,
for
then
my
more
uncle.
out of curiosity, I think it depends on the chapter you take too. So is
Yep. So
this
I took a
what was
chapter seven.
seven? Okay, that's what it sounded like. Yeah, okay.
So I ended up going to my uncle's. I worked there, and I fried chicken, and it was really a humbling experience because that's where I went to college. I was pretty
Yeah.
successful in that town. Like I was in like your magazines and different things as a young entrepreneur, and then all of a sudden I'm at like the low of the low, right? And I remember I used to hide from the counter so that my professors don't see me. Because I was so embarrassed, like, man, I went from an entrepreneur to, going
Yeah, and
backwards.
it's a smaller town, so people are definitely talking.
So I ended up doing that for a while, and I was trying to strategize, right? Because it goes back to the entrepreneur mind. You're always trying to figure out your solution. So
Plotting
I
your
was like,
escape in this case.
So I was like, "Okay, I'm working, I'm making, I'm probably a little above minimum wage. I'm not doing that great. I have a bachelor degree in software engineering, but man, this is talk about like 5, 6 years later. And I was like, the tech has completely changed. I've been in the restaurant business for that long. And I was like, okay, how do I get back into IT? Right. And I went to my campus and the career center, or whatever. And I asked him, like, hey, what would you suggest? What type of job would be good for me? I have this entrepreneur background. And they're like, have you thought about, and it was that time, should I go get a master's degree? Right.
Okay.
And it was around that time, you got to remember in 08, you got to remember the stock market, the real estate market just fell. Right.
Yeah, I know, 'cause I've got a similar story where I was an intern at Cerner in tech, and then they discontinued my internship right around 08, and the best job I can get is a pizza flipper. So I have about a 3-year hiatus before I finally get back into tech between pizza flipper and cook at
Yep.
Hy-Vee.
So it just fell through. So to put it into context, and so like technology jobs wasn't really readily available. It was one of those things. 08. Yep.
It was tough.
So I was like, hey, what can I get into? Now I'm also inexperienced, right? I've been away from it. Tech was really changing really fast between 04 and 08, right? So I was like, what can I do? So they're like, hey, have you thought about maybe applying for management training jobs instead of getting a master's degree? Because a lot of people had graduate degrees, but they had no jobs during 08 and 09. Instead, my career advisor suggested, instead of getting your graduate degree, why don't you go into a management training program? And she gave me some options. Go apply for enterprise rent-a-car. Go apply for
This is so cool too, because they have incentive to get you back into the system theoretically, and yet they're not doing that. So,
Yep.
but also I think how many people out there are discounting the value of their of a career guide within the
Yep.
university, because that's where I got the job at Cerner basically. So keep going. Sorry.
Yep.
Love
And
it.
then they were saying like Aldi, and I think it was they were Aldi and Walgreens. They have some of the top management training programs. So I went and applied for all three, right? I applied for that, and lo and behold, I ended up at Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
Excellent.
And so went into Enterprise Rent-A-Car as a management training. By then, you got to remember, I'm probably in my 22, 20, 22, 20. No, I was older than that by then. I don't know how old I was. Yeah.
That's
So
okay, because you described being about 22 at the
by
restaurant,
then, I
so
was
I'm
probably
thinking three
around
or four.
mid-20s, right? So you got to remember, I have all this experience, right, as an entrepreneur and doing all this stuff with a degree. I go in, and anyone who watches this show who's worked for enterprise will understand their philosophy, right? So you got, they recruit people right out of college. They're super young, and then they go through their,
Is that the name of a show? Who's worked for Enterprise?
I don't know, it might be.
Okay, sorry. All right, anyway, sorry, keep going. I thought no, sorry. Keep
No,
going.
I
My
mean,
bad.
not anyone watching your show that's worked there.
Okay, I understand. Oh yeah, anybody that's
Yep.
watching this, that's worked for Enterprise. Excellent. Okay,
Yep, they'll get
all right.
it, right?
They'll get it.
So they'll hire these management trainees right out of college. They go through the
Right out of college.
program, and then
Yep.
they put you in a management position
Sure.
where you work at that branch and you manage the branch, right? So here
Right.
I am with all these experience, and now here's this 20-year-old or 21-year-old. Yeah, you got to remember, when you give people authority at 20, 21, some of them aren't the best managers. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
So,
Servant leadership, not there.
yep.
Not
So
there.
you got this guy yelling at you, and you got to remember, enterprise, everyone's supposed to wear white dress shirt, tie, even when it's 100 degrees outside. It doesn't matter, right? And you got to remember, they tell you as management training, but you're also washing rental cars and doing all this stuff, right? It really, they really, now I have to say, out of all, when I did that, I feel enterprise does a really good job at preparing you for entrepreneurship, because I think it comes as close as it gets. Like, people forget, entrepreneurs get their hands dirty, when you're first starting. Unless you're handed a silver spoon, you're the one that's going to do all the crap. right? It's not always luxury. You know, it's not the highlight reel you see on social media, right? So enterprise really makes you, hey, you got this right dress shirt on, you got tie, you feel good about yourself. Here's a hose, here's a brush, go wash some cars. No.
Let's
So you're
go.
washing cars. Their philosophy is also when the phone rings in the morning when business renters or renting cars, right? Is no matter how large the line is, you got to learn to take care of people, right? You got to talk a certain way. You got to hold your emotions. So I feel it's the closest to entrepreneurship training. So while I was doing enterprise, fairly quickly, I ended up taking the test to, so I have other paths to go with my career at enterprise besides the management training. And with my entrepreneur background, I ended up taking my M. They have a test called MQI. So the MQI, I passed it and I got options. So I went into sales with enterprise and I ended up selling vehicles, right? That were rentals. And now I was on the sales side of enterprise. And so, long story short, I kind of strategized myself where, hey, during at enterprise selling cars, I get to talk to a lot of corporate businesses, right? So we're selling these vehicles back to like companies that have a fleet, right? At discounted price, that type of thing. So I was like, hey, that will put me in front of potentially maybe business owners that are hiring, right? So I did that, and that's how I ended up moving to Kansas City at first, right? They transferred me to Kansas City. I was like, I gotta get out of Springfield. There's not a big enough market for IT. So my wife and I was married in 09, and so we moved to Kansas City. And from there, I ended up meeting a company that does recruiting, IT recruiting. So I ended up taking that job because I knew, hey, if I'm an IT recruiter, now I'm even one, four steps even closer to an IT job. So I became an IT recruiter and met all these businesses. And lo and behold, I ended up working for a logistics software company that does international logistics. And that's kind of how I got into the whole. I was in charge of helping them develop this new software, a marketing plan and strategy because of my sales background. And slowly I became a marketing director there, and that company sold, and it takes me to today, right? I ended up doing J29. So yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot and fascinating because you could have started J29 at any point, but you'd kind of walked up. So tell me about what, because constantly I'm hearing get into a job here, get into a job there. I'm working closer to a job over here. But, well, I guess in between, because you've definitely done entrepreneurship, you did J29 Global, and then you did. So it's interesting because you kind of go from an entrepreneurial in your younger to a career oriented, is kind of what I'm hearing, back to entrepreneurial. So what was that return?
Yep. So a few things, right? One, I had to build back my credit. I'm really good with building credit. So one, I had to build my credit. So I had strategy on also I needed to build my money, right? If you don't have money, is you don't just go start a business, right? And then yeah, the worst thing to start a business is no credit and no money. You know, it's kind of rough, right? So
This is a little tough.
it goes back to, you know, people forget entrepreneurship is also about patience, right? The people that win are the ones that are willing to wait, right? I think a lot of people jump into business and they think, oh, overnight success. I'm gonna make six figures. I hear that all the time, especially you know, people who's never done it. Oh, I'm gonna start this business and next year I'm gonna make six figures.
Build it and they will come. I've got this beautiful thing. 100%.
But
I've
no
got
one
a buddy
tells
of
you,
mine, and
you still have to work just as hard, actually harder than when you work for someone. And on top of that, you're sacrificing a lot of time and energy and effort to put in. It's no longer an 8 to 5, right? It's you got to put in the hours.
It's 24/7.
So when that company ended up selling, right? I think it was my wife. She encouraged me. She goes, "Kevin, throughout, like, we've been married since 09, I can tell." So in the back of my mind, you got to remember too, from 09 to around 20, now we're fast forward 2014, right? All that time period, in the back of my head, I wanted to open my restaurant again at some point. I wasn't even thinking about marketing agency or anything like that. And Jen, who's my wife, she goes, "Hey, you love it. You love business because you're always looking at other people's business, what they're doing." And she goes, "At the heart of everything, you're an entrepreneur. So you got to do it." And at the time, we were having our second baby. And she was pregnant with our second. And she was like, I was like, "Man,
What timing?
I was like, I don't want to take the risk." I was like, I'm a marketing director now. I can easily, get a high paying job and just do that, go the career route. So the Asian side of me kind of kicked in, right? I wanted that security, and she's like, "No, you should do
Also,
it."
the father side, you got a
Yeah, the
double.
father side too. Yep.
Yeah.
True. So she's like, "No, you should just do it. You want to start a business, I know." And it was funny because at the time I was so the company hasn't sold yet, but I knew that company was going to sell. So I started consulting clients on marketing stuff already on the side. So I went kind of the secure route. I was like, "Hey, what if on the weekend and after hours I
The overlap.
consult
Yes,
more
yes, yes,
clients,
yes,
right?"
yes.
So I went on this hiatus for a year, almost like, working all the time. I get off my full-time job. Now at night I'm working till 1, 2 a.m., wake back up, work, and then I was doing stuff on the weekend. And I had enough clients, honestly, like I was already making a salary from just my side gigs that I ended up when that company sold, I just shifted into J29 Creative Group. And that's how I started the company. And it was really out of my basement, consulting clients. And I think it was a year in until we were actually official, right? So technically, we've been doing it for 10 years. I always tell people it's 9 on paper because I started the company really a year into it. Then I was like, "Okay, let's get this thing licensed. Let's do all the right things to make it happen."
Now, you and I are definitely going to go a little long at this point. So
Yep.
now's an all right time. Are you okay to go a little bit
I'm
longer?
fine. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Because I really want to dig into J29. And part of the reason I really want to dig into J29, now's a great time to say you were kind of an initial encouragement, the catalyst, if you will. It's like 10 people say you should do something, and that's that 10 person that's like, oh, definitely need to do it. And so I'd heard, start a podcast once or twice, different perspectives. But the reason it meant, I think, a little bit more coming from you is because I had proposed a very specific set of like, it's long sales cycle, blah, blah, blah. We're going to start to talk about a lot of sales and marketing, hopefully, if we can, because that's what you guys do over there, right?
Yep.
You were like, well, you should start a podcast. You're good at carrying on a conversation. It was targeted to what we were talking about. And what I've really enjoyed about you, Kevin, and I really want to draw back on your history to try and find an answer for this, is you dig down layers, right? This isn't the we put duct tape on it and that solves the problem. This is the where did the breakdown happen? At what layer? And how do we solve it in a way that's long lasting? And I think from a marketing perspective, it's really interesting that for you to have that dynamic because I can kind of tell you get down to the psychological level of like, okay, we live in a world now where you can't trust what you're seeing. And so with that marketing shift with AI, so what has had you, is it just that entrepreneur spirit that's had you troubleshoot at that level? What kind of has you peel apart the onion?
I think it's funny, right? If you look at my career history, I think it's that software dev, right? So when you're a software engineer, we're taught to debug. So you're looking
Okay.
at, when you first come out of college, you're looking at lines of code that someone else wrote, and you put on your headphones and you debug, right? So for me, I feel, and also the youth pastor part too, right? At the heart of anything to fix something, and you know this in your business, you gotta find the root cause. It can't
Yeah.
be surface level. What is the root of it? And I think it's the same thing with marketing. So many people fail at marketing. The root of it sometimes isn't the agency. It isn't what they're doing. The root of it sometimes is them, right? Is your business ready for marketing? Do you have the personality to put yourself out there? Are you willing to take photos of yourself? There's all these things mixed in, right? And some people aren't a fit for marketing today, right? Because marketing today is no longer about billboards and PR and just advertising. It's really about human relationships and connecting. So, are you genuinely a relationship builder? If not, can you find someone that can do that for your company? And that's something you have to ask yourself. So, you have to look at all these things in order to make marketing click.
That's fascinating. And is it safe to say, and maybe it's just me kind of trying to catch up as a business owner, but it really feels like marketing right now is shifting practically daily.
Yes. And it's funny, I tell my wife this all the time. It's almost like I get to relive my when the web
Yep.
bubble bursts.
The
I feel like,
Java from COBOL to Java
right now
to.
I'm reliving it, and I'm like, man, I get to relive that situation, and now I know the playbook because I'm seeing it. Marketing's going through the same thing that development was going through back then, right? AI is going to take over a lot of these jobs. So what happens is costs of some of these things are going to go down. As much as marketing people hate to say it, hey, you're no longer worth, 80 grand when these
This is the
bots.
website playbook too. The 80 grand for a website can't even charge two now.
Yep, it's very similar, right? Because there are going to be jobs that is the reality, right? And we can't control it that these bots and AI agents are going to take over, right? Tasks, right? Yep.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating, but I feel like it's starting to put an emphasis on genuine. Well, I was just thinking this morning, at LinkedIn, you'll enjoy this. Somebody made a post and I hit that read more button. And this particular post was like 3 pages on my mobile app. It was one of the longest and it was intriguing at first. I got 25% into the thing before I was like, I'm done. Not only am I done, I'm kind of starting to become fearful of that read more on LinkedIn. And so it's part of this is like, human behavioral shift, right? Forever, and it's probably still great. You put the hook and then read more, and then you've got more underneath, right?
Yep.
But now it almost seems like people are, I don't know what the algorithm is, but it almost seems like people are padding, like SEO, like they're padding a bunch of words in there that just, and so it's interesting because as much as AI is taking over, I also feel like what it's also doing is pushing people back towards genuine interaction.
And you're seeing it, marketing's changing, right? It's we're I think in 2025 it's more interest-based, right? The algorithm's gonna be more interesting. Like, are you interesting, right? It's interest-based, right? And I think it's migrating in that category. Like, things are changing. Like, there's too much vanilla content out there. So a lot of these things are just because of AI and people relying on ChatGPT. The stuff you're seeing is very vanilla. Now you got bots, spitting out articles, right? And for different companies. And I think then people are, hey, am I interested in this topic? This is where creativity comes in. Or, hey, whoever's producing the content, are they creative? Something has to attract me as an audience, right? It has to be something a little more, or I feel you're just wasting time.
Yeah. What is something, so think of the new up and coming entrepreneur. You know, they're starting a business. Hopefully they have the wit to be like, well, I need a market, I need a sales, I need to do all this thing. How do they, well, I guess for one, kind of how do they juggle it? But then for two, what's like an entry level? Because I feel like we all, you know, it's interesting. Actually, I think you clipped this in your thing on your podcast that, you know, we all start throwing spaghetti at the wall. And that, you know, what is the one thing that you think can make the most impact that somebody can really zero in on to get that traction to then start to like engage with your firm, for example, or to really actually go deep?
You mean if they're a new
How,
entrepreneur?
yes, a new entrepreneur, they're getting started, right? They don't mind putting themselves out there. They want to kind of figure out and dive into marketing. What's that one thing they can really kind of start with? So for example, okay, like, you know, I think there's value to going deep on Facebook, let's say, versus trying to figure out Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and X simultaneously. What's like the platform you might recommend they start with? What is a layer, or is it a platform? Is
Yeah,
it
so I
social
think,
media posts, or is it like, hey, ads actually are great if you
I
want to
think
go
the
deep on
most
that?
important thing with marketing is you gotta first know your brand. You gotta know who you are and kind of your why behind what you're doing. You gotta ask yourself these questions like, one is why am I doing this? What am I providing? What's the solution, right? What kind of problem are we solving? And then you gotta know who's attracted to that problem solving? Who you gotta know your audience. Like I'm pretty sure Sam knows how to identify his ideal client, and I do too, right? I gotta know my avatar as a who's my ideal client. And I think the way you gotta almost work backwards and go identify that first, and then you ask yourself, where are they? What are the things they do? What are the things they're interested in? And once you find out all those things, you show up, right? You show up where they're at with things that they're interested in, right? And talk about things they're interested in, right? Example, if I'm trying to target small business owners, right? They're not interested in me talking about Nike campaigns and cinematic videos. They can care less. I can't afford that. Right. But you know what? They would love to hear my story because I went through something they are going through. You know, they can relate. They want to hear tips about the grind, the stuff people don't talk about, right? The struggles. Yeah. Let's pull through the curtain. The stuff Elon doesn't talk about, right? Because he's already at the peak of the mountain. They want to hear about the little guy, you know, who, you know, I can't figure out how to buy Christmas gifts for his kid. You know, they want to hear those heart stories. That's marketing, right? Marketing is meeting people where they're at and identifying your audience. And I think that's the first start. Like, ask yourself these questions and then identify it and then play off that. Yep.
That's cool. And I think as the entrepreneur, that should be to some end freeing and frightening because a lot of it really starts at you, depending on what it is. It's like, you know, what, there's a reason you're providing this service. So, what is it that you want or would want if you were that other person? And because your ideal client probably isn't going to be the person that you don't connect with at all, right? You wouldn't think. Depending, I mean, I guess if it's B2C, maybe, I don't know. Maybe we're just serving them alcohol. Who cares if we connect with them or not? But in most cases, you know, on like a B2B basis, your ideal client is most definitely going to be the person you're going to connect with more closely. And so that means you need to know who you are and what you want, what you're providing. And so, yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. That's cool. Self-discovery. I like it. That seems to come up again and again and again, too.
Mm-hmm.
Know your why, know your values, which also, interestingly enough, is part of the entrepreneur's journey, because at some point you're going to hit an apex of difficulty, and
Yep.
then you're going to figure out your why and your values. So as we kind of start to sort of wrap this up, we have a couple questions I like to ask.
Okay.
So there's a motto over here. If we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. So we'll draw from Isaac Newton. Who's been a giant in your life that's helped you to see further?
Ooh, that's good. I think my dad, is kind of nice because I think seeing his life really helped me identify that life is really short. And there are certain things that what's more valuable to Kevin Kwok, right? Is it building a company or a title and making money? And for me, I can say now, today, you need money to make it, but that isn't my priority because I saw how short my dad's life was. So my dad passed away at 59. So that's not very old. And for me, I was like, man, that's it.
What was your dad's name?
Eddie Kwok. Yep. So for me, I was like, man, you can build all this stuff, you can do all this stuff, you can plan all you want, but when it's over, right? And all of a sudden, I was like, man, while I was watching my dad die, while he was dying, I was like, people don't talk about their titles. People don't talk about, hey, let me take a look at my college degree or all my achievements. What they want to do is like, hey, I want to see my son. I want to see my wife. I want to see my children, right? And those are the things people care about. It's always relationships and those things, right? But then a lot of times I think we go on with life living and doing, and then we miss out on time being spent with those who we care the most about, right? A lot of times we think we have a next day, right? Hey, we can do this tomorrow. Hey, I'll go to your basketball game tomorrow, son. But what if tomorrow never come? I would love to just sit down with my dad again to have that one more conversation, right? About business or whatever. I'll never have that, right? And it's like he didn't plan that. He didn't know. But how many times did we miss because, I was living on my own. He was living in his house. He's like, hey, come over, son. Let's do it. Oh, I'm too busy. We're just real busy trying to get the restaurant going. Oh, I don't want to see you, Dad, because we are at work together. And then all of a sudden, it was that one last time, and I never got to talk to him again. So for me, I am nowadays, I'm very intentional with what I do. So.
Thank you. If there was one sort of rule of thumb that you found to be true again and again and again, what would it be?
Consistency. Yep. I think if with everything you do, doesn't matter if you're working out or if you're trying to get good at something. I would say most, let's go back to marketing because I'm a marketer. I see more companies fail at marketing because of inconsistency. They give up too soon. Just right before it takes off, they quit. Right? Consistency is key. With business, same thing. Oh man, my brand's not working. Oh, I'm gonna go ahead and rebrand. Well, you didn't even give that brand time. No one even knew about you. Why are you rebranding? So I feel consistency. The key to being successful at anything is waking back up and doing it over and over and over and over again.
I'm going to cheat a little bit because I'm super curious and I can't help but ask, how, for a marketing, when should somebody really stop to measure it? You know,
When
you
should
think
they?
there are plenty of bad marketing strategies out there. Staying consistent at it for 20 years is going to be a bad idea. So when's kind of like a general rule of thumb to measure
I
and
think you'll
cut?
know. right? You'll know. I think one, when you're starting anything, give it time. And it's different. Social media is going to be different than email campaigns, and then podcast is going to be different than social media management. Each tool, have a goal, right? Hey, if I'm starting social media, don't go, hey, my goal is to make X amount with social media, because that's not what organic posting's for. It's really a brand lift, right? It's not really a revenue generator. You got to run ads for that, right? So for me, if you're going to do, let's take social media for example, make sure you have an accurate KPI that's realistic. So it might be, hey, engagement. It might be views. I want more views on these posts, so more eyes are on my brand. You know, then measure those things, right? I think a lot of times we measure the wrong things, and a lot of people just don't know what to measure, and then they end up failing at marketing because they're measuring the wrong things. Because I hear so many small business owners that think like, hey, if I'm gonna start posting on social media, I'm gonna generate X amount of revenue. Well, that's not realistic, because organic posting's never gonna do that for you. You gotta have some kind of call to action. You gotta have maybe some ads to go along with it. And it's, I think a lot of times people have the wrong targets and they're hitting the wrong things. And I think that's a better indicator of when to give up, right? If I'm running ads, and ads, the goal of ads, of course, is to convert. If it's not converting, turn those things off, right? Or change your creative around, right? But if it's our organic postings, hey, you gotta be a little more forgiving. Give it time. Measure views versus revenue, because hey, just because you're posting on social media doesn't mean you're gonna double your revenue next year, right? Sales is gonna do that, you know? So, yep.
Cool. All right, Kevin. So, how can people engage with J29 and Kevin Kwok?
You can follow us on it's J29 Creative, all our social handles, and then it's www.j29 Creative Group is our website. And with me, I am very active on LinkedIn, so that is my platform of choice for my personal brand. So you can reach out to me. Kevin F. Kwok.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kevin.
Hey, thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
Goodbye, everybody.
Later. Bye.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.